This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Booz Allen Hamilton is pleased to present this panel discussion, Open Networks for Open Government, Identity in the Web 3.0 Framework, as part of its Distinguished Speakers Series on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the September 8th, 2009 Distinguished Speakers event, Open Networks for Open Government, Identity in the Web 3.0 Framework, part of the Distinguished Speakers series Focus on Identity, sponsored by the Integrated Identity Investment. It's my pleasure to welcome Judy Spencer from the Office of Government-Wide Policy, General Services Administration. Judy?
Thank you, and good afternoon. The Federal Identity Credential and Access Management Subcommittee of the Federal CIO Council recently published two new documents that describe trust frameworks and scheme adoption processes based on OMB's e-authentication guidance for federal agencies published in December 2003 and also known as MO404 and the National Institute of Technology's special publication 800-63, which provides technical requirements for implementing MO404. The scheme adoption process reviews individual identity solution standards and develops profiles within those standards that meet government needs, while the trust framework adoption process is aimed at establishing industry-sponsored certification of these identity solution providers that can then be leveraged by the federal community. These documents are now being put to use in identifying identity solutions that meet the requirements for Identity Assurance Level 1 as defined by MO404, which is little or no confidence in the real-world identity, but which allows for the personalization of the website experience, blog participation, and a myriad of other website interactions. The intent is to enable citizens to create user accounts and log into government websites by using their open identity solutions from providers like Google, Yahoo, Facebook, and others. Even without requiring any personally identifiable information, an agency can allow individuals to create anonymous accounts to enable true individual interaction that can significantly improve service delivery and mission effectiveness for agencies with a citizen-facing mission. We believe this is a great step forward in pursuit of the President's effort to increase transparency, expand citizen access to services, and improve service delivery for citizens. Today, I am joined by a distinguished panel of experts to discuss the use of open solutions for enabling open trust networks for open government. First, I'd like to introduce Dr. Peter Alterman, Senior Advisor to the CIO for Strategic Initiatives at the National Institutes of Health. He served as some time as Deputy Associate Administrator for Technology Policy at the General Services Administration, and before that, he was the Assistant CIO for e-authentication at the National Institutes of Health and Chair of the U.S. Federal PKI Policy Authority. He has been involved in internet technology since serving on the Federal Research Internet Coordinating Committee in 1989. Over the years, he has received numerous awards from NIH, most recently the NIH Merit Award and an NIH Director's Award for his pioneering work in federated identity management. He received his PhD in 1974 from the University of Denver. Welcome, Peter. Next is Ronald Carpinella, the Vice President of Identity Management at Equifax. In this position, Ron leads the company's efforts in user-centric identity management and has strategic oversight for product development and marketing initiatives in this area. Throughout his career, he has served in a number of leadership roles at internet media visionaries such as Google, VO, Engage Media, Flycast, Fansonly, and Relevant Knowledge. Mr. Carpinella began his career in media and advertising work for J. Walter Thompson and Foot, Cone, and Belding, where he provided strategic counsel on the Ford, Domino's Pizza, and Taco Bell accounts. Welcome, Ron.
Variety doesn't.
Eric Sachs, the product manager for security and CIO departments at Google. Eric Sachs has more than 15 years of experience in the areas of user identity and security for hosted web applications. During his 5-year-plus years at Google, he has worked as a product manager for many services, including the Google Account Login System, Google Apps for your domain, Orkut.com social network, Google Health, Google Security, and internal systems. Currently, Mr. Sachs works with Google's CIO on an effort to move Google's internal systems to cloud-based technologies by leveraging the same developer tools that Google makes available publicly. As part of that work, he is involved with the development of industry standards for data interoperability, including Oath, OpenID, and OpenSocial. Before Google, Mr. Sachs was CTO and co-founder of Interliant, which provided hosted corporate email services. While at Interliant, Mr. Sachs led co-development projects with both IBM and Microsoft to build platforms for hosting consumer and enterprise web applications. Mr. Sachs graduated with a BA in computer science in 1993 from Rice University. Welcome, Eric. And finally, Don Thibault, Executive Director of the OpenID Foundation, a standards organization representing the leaders in social media technology. He joined the foundation at the beginning of 2009 to position the organization and its membership for long-term growth. Mr. Thibault has a rich background in the data, identity, and social layers of both the phone and web channels. He has both enterprise and entrepreneurial experience in consortium-based business models for data, analytics, and web content. An information technology industry expert, Mr. Thibault has had senior management positions with leading organizations including TransUnion, Reed Elsevier, and LexisNexis. Welcome, gentlemen. The government's trust framework model at Assurance Level 1 enables the establishment of anonymous user accounts, taking advantage of open solutions as a basis for allowing government agencies to allow some level of individual interaction with citizens without requiring the collection of any personally identifiable information. It would probably be helpful if one of you explained in non-technical terms what this means. Don?
Thank you, Judy. In simple terms, this initiative is resulting in really three things. It allows the government to interact with citizens where the citizens are today. That is to say, citizens that have a Google Gmail account, a Yahoo account, an AOL account, can use this account to interact with the government. It also allows citizens to work with an identity provider that they trust, that they have a relationship with, whether that be a Google account or a business account that follows the OpenID standards and the government profile. And lastly, it gives the citizen the opportunity to interact with the government where he is, with a provider that they trust, and with a password that they already know. So these three very simple value propositions for the citizen really drive the key dynamic with any new technology, which is adoption. So I think what's happened here is that by engaging citizens where they are, with identity providers that they trust, with passwords that they know, that we have an opportunity to engage as many citizens as possible, as soon as possible.
Thank you, Don.
Yeah, I'd also like to add, what's really intriguing about this is how, for the first time, we're enabling what I like to use the term pseudonymous interactions. You can have a pseudonym, in essence, that identifies you but doesn't identify you to have a personalized experience. And that's one of the things that this Open Trust framework is really establishing, is that ability to interact without having to expose your personally identifiable information, and at the same time providing a different tools to do it. So whether you want to use a tool that like OpenID or Information Card, it's at your choice and how you wish to interact. And that's a unique experience that hasn't been done before.
Thank you, Ron. Eric?
Sure. One of the other works in this area is that many of the companies you had mentioned, Yahoo, Google, AOL, were competitors in many different areas, but this is actually a space where open standards have been the only approach we found that can be successful. So my counterparts at these other companies, I meet together very frequently, and we're sort of only successful if we can all agree on the same thing. So we want some competition, but it's only going to be successful if we can create standards groups like what we're doing here and work with the government for them to also give their feedback in these open standards, make sure we're meeting their needs.
Thank you. So with any new program like this, there are skeptics who discount the value of the effort or who point to the impediments for adoption or implementation. How would you answer these critics? Eric?
Sure. So Don talked about some value for the citizen. Let's talk about the value for someone who's running a government website. Today, if you do want to offer some personalization option for citizens coming to your website, there are three main options, the first of which is, well, don't do anything, which many of us at the sites unfortunately do. The second is, okay, act like a standard consumer website, ask users to register with their email address and password and log in. But for most government websites, it's very hard to get permission to collect these emails because they're considered personally identifiable information. Some of the websites have experimented with asking users to register with a unique username and password for every government website they visit. But, you know, as most of us who have experimented with that have seen, users can't remember these usernames, so the usage of those approaches is rather poor. So what we're trying to provide now is a fourth option, which is sort of a combination of the last two, where the experience for the user might be that they go to a government website, they want to personalize their experience there, they want to say what areas are more interesting to them, and they would click a button for one of these service providers Don had mentioned that supports these framework standards, whether it's Equifax, Yahoo, Google. Once they get sent to that service provider's interface and they're logged in, now they get presented a question, is the user okay with the idea of being identified to this government website? Only after the user gives their consent are they identified, but they're identified not with their email address, not with their social security number, but what we call a unique persistent identifier, meaning it's unique to every government website they visit. So a user's activity on a health site and a finance site of the government cannot be correlated. And the user doesn't even need another password, so we believe in many cases providing a better user experience than many consumer websites today, while still protecting the user's anonymity if that's what they're looking for.
Thank you, Eric. Ron, something to add?
Yeah, I'll add to that. One of the really great features of this also is, like we talked about in the past, you would have to register everywhere you went to have that personalized experience. Well, we're trying to get rid of that necessity. In essence, having the single sign-on through the Open Trust framework that will make it easier for you to access that personalized experience without having to remember all those things. I always laugh when I look at my notebook that has 30 pages of usernames and passwords for the simplest of access. Well, this is an effort to try and eliminate the need for that, especially in the simplest of cases, which is just about user experience, and doing it without having to keep that PII about the individual.
Thank you, Ron. Don?
So lastly, I think the key point, the take-home point, is that this is a user-centric model. This puts the citizen in control of that of his personally identifying information. So we have a construct here that allows whistleblowers to participate. It also allows users to choose to share very intimate details, to participate in a clinical trial at NIH. So that range of flexibility and the accommodation for the user to drive the experience, we believe, is not only going to be the engine of adoption, but it lays the basis for building into levels of security at different levels of assurance.
Thank you, Don. So what kinds of services can realistically be supported with this level one framework? Ron?
Sure. This is actually kind of interesting to talk about because your imagination is really your limitation. With the single sign-on capabilities and in particular this level one assurance, what we're doing is we're creating environments for people to have better interactions with government, in particular to make it easier for them to get the information they want. I mean, how many times have we gone to a destination, let's just use the IRS as a destination that probably all of us have frequented, trying to find the information. It's all there, but when you can't find it, it's not much use. So now if you do find it, when you do find it, and when you make it accessible to come back every time, makes it more useful, and you have better interactions with the citizenry. You know, when you're coming in for personal information, you don't want to see stuff on being a farmer. Conversely, if you're a small business, you're really not interested in the personal information. So this is a great example of how that can be customized and make it easier to interact. And the same thing can be said for Social Security, National Institutes of Health. Be where it may, there are many opportunities to enhance the experience we give to the citizens and for engagement with government, whether it's direct citizen action or even business in the future.
Thank you, Ron. Now, we know that NIH has some experience in the real world with implementing services taking advantage of the Level 1 framework. So let's hear from the government. Peter, could you talk a little about what you've done and how this advanced the mission of NIH?
Well, first of all, it's when you say you, it's the plural you. I don't want my 30 colleagues coming after me with knives if they think I'm claiming this. That said, we've been in the business of accepting level one credentials from external providers for about a year and a half now with the InCommon Foundation. What we're doing either this week or next is we're open for testing with OpenID credentials to add to that experience, to add to that credential pool, to add to those people who can get in. And we're going to follow up very quickly with InfoCard. We've got all of this stuff working. What do we do with it? What do citizens do with it? Well, it's not just making sure you like the color or you can bookmark the page that's buried 55 slides down. What it is, what we're using for, we have 6 apps in production right now. We've got 132 more slated. We do things like for level one, the Allergy and Infectious Diseases Institute does online training for lab technicians, for principal investigators. So using a level one credential, a researcher in literally Bangladesh who gets an OpenID credential can log into the how to do your grant app at NIH and improve his chances of getting a grant. We have training apps for managing laboratory animal research requirements. The NIH library electronic publications are online, available to level one users anywhere. We have National Library of Medicine, of course, has a huge number of online apps, and we're in the process of integrating them in. So what we're doing is we're not only making user customizable web pages available, but we're using level one credentials to provide real online apps, wikis, where actual work can be done at level one. Now, that said, how are we approaching this? Well, we're not identity enabling every single app out there because we have a few thousand electronic grant submission and research application processing is coming online soon. That's a very large one. We get about 40, 50,000 of those a year. Trees all over Canada scream when we have submission deadlines. We're going to do away with that. We've been in the process of doing away with that for years. One of the things that we're planning to do is take our single sign-on service, which is CA SiteMinder, and we just plug apps into the back of it. And these apps are level one apps or level two apps, in some cases level three apps. We have level four capability for the government PIV cards for things like staff time and attendance system. And the business system, we're getting the procurement system in for level four stuff. That's all internal. We have PIV cards. So we're covering all four levels. We can do that by technology enabling a portal or a single sign-on site rather than having to do one-offs. We're also making this service, and we have made this service, available to any other government entity that wants to use us. So we're actually going out and marketing. One of the reasons I'm here is to let you all know that we're marketing this capability. And we're in the forefront in part because we think it's important and necessary, in part because it's doable without stretching us, and in part because we can recoup funds.
Thank you, Peter. And with that, we'll take a short break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Booz Allen Hamilton's Distinguished Speaker Program panel discussion, Open Networks for Open Government, Identity in the Web 3.0 Framework, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Booz Allen has assembled a panel of leading experts from across the government to discuss open networks for open government, identity in the 3.0 framework. The move to adopt trust frameworks and open trust networks heralds an era of greater openness and interoperability between government agencies, the private sector, and the public at large. Many see this new identity-driven move to open federation as a critical step toward a more open and efficient government. Learn more at boozallen.com/identity. Booz Allen Hamilton delivers results that endure. Welcome back to Booz Allen Hamilton's Distinguished Speakers Program panel discussion, Open Networks for Open Government, Identity in the Web 3.0 Framework, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back. All right. Thank you, Peter, for that very interesting discussion on what NIH is doing at the moment. So, are there any real-world examples of success from the commercial sector that you can point to as a roadmap for agencies who might be trying to get their arms around how to fit this new capability into their mission? Eric?
Sure. I spoke earlier to the fact that a lot of the work in this area is done as standards among a number of different companies, just not just by a single company. Many of those standards were not just about the technology and security aspects. Most of it was actually about the user experience aspects. Microsoft, Google, Yahoo, Facebook, AOL in particular, spent a lot of time last year experimenting with different user experiences for this type of federated login scenario with consumers to find out what worked best. And honestly, we did have to experiment a lot and fail a lot to find some approaches that worked well. So let me give you, one of the examples of this actually working well. I did mention before that government websites have to worry about not collecting PII. Well, consumer websites, a little bit easier. They can ask for email addresses. But a particular problem that they complain about is most users, they'll come to a new website, they'll say, oh, I have to register and create an account to log in there. How annoying. Okay, let me enter my email address, my password a couple times. Most consumer websites find about a third of people don't finish the process. It's just too annoying. So one of the companies who is aggressive in this space is called Plaxo. They're a sort of enterprise-focused social network. And so they worked with Google, Yahoo, and some others to experiment with using this OpenID technology. They've gotten their success rate of these registrations from about 60% to 92%. Consistently for months. And as they did this, while they started out with using OpenID, they actually leveraged some additional open standards, open social, OAuth, activity streams to provide an enhanced social experience for the user. And they found that as they did that, that further increased this registration rate. That's really, what got it up to this 92%, where users saw the value proposition, much more visibly, and they got through their experience much more quickly. And so now we're trying to look to see if we can repeat that experience with government-facing websites as well.
As Eric said, I think the role of standards really bears repeating here, because the industry requires standards for the kind of the kind of value that we need to deliver to not only fellow companies and partners, but also to the citizen. What does that mean? It means that because the citizen is driving the experience, They're using the best knowledge that Eric referenced earlier, developed by the private sector. The government can influence one of the key issues that has bedeviled all of us in the web, and that is privacy. Because the government's privacy requirements are baked into the initiative that we're speaking to today, it's clear to all involved, the citizen, the participating companies, and to industry as a whole, what the rules of the road are. Those privacy protections, because they're clear, because they're consistent across adopting agency websites, and because they're constant, we believe that this represents a standard that will be followed for years to come. It allows, I think, for the first time, the issues of privacy to be addressed in a user-centric way, in a way that industry can understand and build upon, and that the citizen, at the end of the day, can find protection. By having standards built in and adopted in the way that we have in this public and private collaboration, we think that we're avoiding a key area that has bedeviled us in the past, which is the lack of standards results in confusion and chaos. And the first casualty of no standards is privacy.
Thank you, Don. So, how do you see implementation gaining traction? How does this move beyond a technical discussion to one that really has an impact on the government's goals to increase transparency, expand citizen access, and improve service delivery? Don?
Well, as I understand it, a couple of interns at Booz Allen spent the summer calculating how many government websites were out there. And they found that over 500 government websites are consumer-facing or citizen-facing. So we think that within that one universe of over 500 government websites, we now have an opportunity to apply the standards with the kind of consistency and constancy that I talked about earlier. Having those standards in place, having industry participated in their development from the get-go, and having the pilot phase that Peter referred to in front of us allows us to promulgate the learning from those pilots broadly within government and out into industry. So we think by laying those tracks, we'll be able to accelerate the adoption not only within government, but the number of participating identity providers in industry.
Thank you, Don. Eric?
And in addition, you know, this can be looked at as, you know, a first step, hopefully, in a long road that we're, you know, going along here. We expect to learn from the government. We expect to learn what else service providers like Google, Yahoo, Equifax can provide to help citizens engage. So we're hopefully not done here yet. We're hopefully going to get more feedback from this, you know, first sets of experiments to help us figure out what could be the next steps, whether it's additional levels of assurance, more social interaction, et cetera.
Thank you, Eric. Rob?
Yeah, simply put, traction comes from providing a good feature and benefit to the consumer or to the users that you're trying to engage. And the technical discussion is about how is it we're going to implement this over all, I mean, 500 websites, which is pretty amazing, but, you know, it's baby steps. And it's going to be getting people to see a benefit from that type of interaction. It's getting a use out of it that we didn't get before, and making it simple to actually become part of the engagement. The beauty of both of these solutions that we're discussing today, information cards and OpenID, is they're really simple to get, and they don't require much from the consumer. It's just basically an OpenID. If you have a Google ID, boom, you got it. iCard Foundation and an iCard, you just ask for it, and we go through a cert on it real quick, and you have it. And so making it simple to get it, even easier than what we're normally used to, makes the adoption a lot easier also. And then putting a benefit behind it. We see the benefit. It makes it a better experience for us. The technical discussion becomes easier to go through because you know somebody wants to support it.
Thank you, Ron. Peter?
Yeah. One of the things that makes this really valuable is that it's a collaborative process. We work with OpenID Foundation and InfoCard Foundation. We've put together, as Judy mentioned at the top of this session, a scheme for OpenID, a scheme for InfoCard, so that the industry knows what kind of implementation requirements we have. And these implementation requirements are there to enable and maintain the government's security privacy requirements. What's really valuable then is that this particular scheme, which is essentially a slice of how to implement, because these schemes give you a lot of opportunities to do a lot of different ways. By using these particular government structured schemes, satisfaction on privacy, satisfaction on level security at the appropriate level, satisfactory trust, all come with the package. This helps to enable uptake in the commercial sector. It helps to build uptake for more of these initiatives as we go forward. One of the things that Judy and I have found over the years doing higher assurance identity management is that if the government sets out clear requirements and rational and reasoned requirements for the government, industry and the rest of the private sector are happy to follow. It helps make things easier and clearer, and not necessarily mandated, but these kinds of schemes, especially in these places, will survive and will flourish out in the rest of the world because of the value proposition that they provide. And that's why our industry partners have taken it.
And it really is the next evolution, if you will, of identity. That we all have an experience of trust frameworks in our lives today through credit card systems or through higher levels of assurance systems that a private sector or a DoD application may provide. Those closed systems have developed identity assurance and authentication with a great level of precision and sophistication. What the little bit of history that we're making here is to apply that learning to open systems and to allow citizen interaction, again, where they are today, and to find privacy-protected identity to be assured in a truly open system framework.
Thank you, Don. A lot of focus is placed on OpenID, probably because there are millions and millions of people who already have an OpenID, whether they realize it or not. But how do information cards fit into this picture? Can someone talk about information cards for a minute and explain how this technology adds to the equation?
Judy, I'd love to chime in. First off, information cards in particular is built off, in essence, what OpenID started. And it's meant to take it to another level. They are complementary in many ways. Use the wallet metaphor for information cards. In essence, we all have a wallet or a purse in our pocket or, you know, or with us on our... And with that, we have different forms of identity. And iCards is enabling you to kind of choose what persona you wish to engage with using an electronic wallet, in essence. Some of those would be verified claims. Some would be self-proclaimed or personalized claims that aren't that haven't been backed by anyone. Where iCards also adds into it is the ability to have a user-centric control that adds on to that privacy assurance. If you don't wish to pass along higher levels of information beyond a level one assurance, you have that control. You also know what information is being passed along. So with that, it actually adds to the strengths that OpenID has started, and it really adds into the capabilities that level one, level two and three will be required, and the ability to share with it. But again, they're complementary. OpenID, the great advantage they have is there's actually, I've heard a billion, does that sound right? But an iCard is actually a very new nascent technology. But I like to say they're complementary in many ways.
Judy, can I ask you a question? Is that permitted here? You said the other day when we were engaging the privacy advocacy community something that I found interesting, and that is that you said that you felt that it would be irresponsible not to introduce OpenID into the equation at this time in government process and government history. What did you have in mind there?
Thank you, Don. Sure, this is cheating. What we had in mind there was the fact that, just as we've been saying, they are so prolific out among what the people are doing, and it's what people have gotten used to using. So many of us have Gmail accounts or Yahoo accounts or AOL accounts, in addition to any other kind of account that we might have. And because this is where the people are, we really do need to find a way to meet them there and then bring them along. And there are real uses for this technology in government. So why reinvent a wheel that is obviously rolling quite well if we can, in fact, take advantage of that? And so that is why we looked at this and determined that there really are ways that we can leverage this. This was literally designed for what we are trying to do here, and it would be mad of us to ignore it. And with that, we're going to take another short break, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Booz Allen Hamilton's Distinguished Speaker Program panel discussion, Open Networks for Open Government, Identity in the Web 3.0 Framework, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Booz Allen has assembled a panel of leading experts from across the government to discuss open networks for open government, identity in the 3.0 framework. The move to adopt trust frameworks and open trust networks heralds an era of greater openness and interoperability between government agencies, the private sector, and the public at large. Many see this new identity-driven move to open federation as a critical step toward a more open and efficient government. Learn more at boozallen.com/identity. Booz Allen Hamilton delivers results that endure.
Welcome back to Booz Allen Hamilton's Distinguished Speakers Program panel discussion, Open Networks for Open Government, Identity in the Web 3.0 Framework, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back. One of the things we'd like to do now is just go back a moment to the business case. Why would a corporation or an agency adopt the framework that the government has developed?
I think they're already adopting pieces of this framework. I think you've seen in dozens of agencies, kind of from the bottom up, the use of various social media tools, whether they be Google Groups or Wikis or Facebook accounts. So in some ways, what we're doing is claiming credit for what's happening organically within government agencies. The collaboration tools provided by various social media providers are very powerful. They're effective, they're easy to use, and they're very low to no cost. So we're applying a set of standards and a schema, as Peter talked about, on something that's already happening. So I think the historic moment, if you will, is that we're not only meeting the citizens where they are, we're meeting government agencies where they are as well.
Thank you, Don. And Peter, what was the trigger point for NIH to move forward with this technology?
Well, time, money. What happens is that we have a fairly large constituency in the research and education area. It's a fairly focused customer base, but a very high-level one, Nobel Prize winners amongst them. What we found is that we were spending so much money internally managing a directory of people who were not employees or internal contractors, that it was starting to impact our ability to do other things. And you know, I'm not one to argue about throwing more money at the Oracle people, but geez, this was ridiculous. So the trigger point really came when we realized that by relying on credentials issued by external parties at known levels of assurance, we could stop building out directories. Directories of graduate students, directories of investigators, directories of postdocs, directories of high school science teachers. We didn't have to do that. All we had to do was to build into our single sign-on solution, which already exists and is already doing work and already embraces the technologies, one little thing. Validate, recognize, consume, and validate level one credentials, that's where you start, issued by others. The directory, the external directory is shrinking. The NIH Commons, which is where PIs who are doing electronic grants administration with us, is going to one of these days soon cut over and disappear. Table after table, database after database, directory after directory is going away. We don't have to spend that money. So the trigger really was a budgetary trigger. Like many things in Washington, it's not real unless it's money, and this was real.
Thank you, Peter. So we're here at Booz Allen for this taping, and they always like to ask, what's next? So what do you think is next for trust frameworks and for OpenID and InfoCards as open solutions for an open government? Don?
Well, I think in the immediate future, what's next is a series of pilots. We'll make mistakes. We'll be piloting not only the technology, the interoperability between the OpenID protocol, the information card protocol, in the context of the CA SiteMinder platform, but we'll also be piloting the notion of trust frameworks, what the collaboration is between the citizen, industry, certification, and government. So we have an exciting period ahead of us in terms of really taking out on a test ride some of these to date theoretical notions of identity, of authentication, and trust frameworks, and really applying them to the real life examples that Peter talked about. I think in that application, it affords companies like Booz Allen and others who provide thought leadership government-wide to export that knowledge and that learning from the pilot period to other agencies and to the private sector. We also know that just as there are dozens of agencies that are queuing up procurements and applications that are identity specific or identity reliant, foreign governments, the Canadians, the folks in the UK, and our Japanese colleagues are also watching this development because it seems to be offering the promise of a baseline in technology and a baseline in policy, like privacy policy development. So we think that what's next is a series of roll-up-the-sleeve workshops that will be conducted using the NIH test case as an example, and a concurrent finalization of how the trust frameworks will be assembled in the industry and privacy policy will be tested.
Thank you, Don. Eric? Yes.
So Google's a big believer in the wisdom of crowds effect. Try to get as much data as you can from a very large segment of users. And we certainly hope that as government websites become open up to more citizen participation, you'll see some of the same value of that. However, solving one problem sometimes brings along others. Getting more and more data from these users obviously will lead to potentials for abuse or trying to decide what signals to take in from the system. So to be honest, we'd like to at least like to trade the problem of not getting this data for having the data with the problem of having to sift through it and keep all of us busy for another 10 years trying to figure out how to address that problem.
And the definition of all of us is changing. The original open source roots of the OpenID standards began in the blogosphere. It migrated to the identity providers, like we've talked about today, be they Google or Yahoo, et cetera. We now see a new wave of participation and industry leadership taking place. Booz Allen has joined the board of the OpenID Foundation and the Information Card Foundation. And that's a good thing, but it really brings a new perspective, that of the folks that are in the glue business, the assembly and integration of all these various pieces, be they technical and policy. And that solution orientation by companies like Booz Allen and others really is a leading edge indicator that the traction that we are looking for here is in fact taking place. And the people and companies that provide thought leadership in this area are investing in this initiative that we've described today.
Thank you, Don. Ron?
I'll also add, as a former Googler, I was pretty indoctrinated on wisdom crowds, and I couldn't agree more. The one thing that comes with crowds also is the lack of insights or participation that comes because people are fearful about putting their information out and being tied into it. And we are giving that ability to participate, in particular, participate with privacy. And, you know, there are those who have certain views of the government that think Big Brother, and there are those who think it's the mother that's there to help. And we need to enable, whether you view one way or the other, enable those interactions and to give them that private control of being able to give their opinion, to give their insights, their ideas, without any fear of doing it. And that's one of the things this Open Trust Framework's doing, is really we're opening a door that to people who really felt they couldn't do it without losing some of that privacy. And that's part of the excitement here. But then that would also lead to other developments over the horizon, which I think are important. You know, MO404 speaks about e-authentication levels 1, 2, 3, and 4. Well, there are preparations without the open trust networks right now to deliver those services. Well, we need to help experiment delivering these and preparing for those down the line. That's what's over the horizon. And that's a task before us. We experiment at this level, get the bugs out, learn from it, apply new techniques, technology, and interaction tools, and then we'll be more, and we'll be ready to deal with those higher level assertions that are going to be a part of, the necessary part of our open government, our digital government, and interactions with the citizenry.
Thank you, Ron. And Peter?
Ron took half of my thunder. So I'll beat him up afterwards, or I'll try. He's a big guy. We are at the beginning. Well, we have been at the beginning of something since 1955 in government, which is computer enabling the business of government. This is another step along a very long path. We don't live in the same world that I was born into. We don't live in the same world that you were born into. My Washington Post this morning is about half the size it was last year. Things are changing. We have real challenges in front of us. We have security challenges in front of us. We have cybersecurity challenges that are huge. The financial services industry is painfully aware of this. What we have here as a first step is the beginning of the other half of cybersecurity. We have border protection, we have sniffers, we have the whole information security infrastructure. We have all of the kinds of work we have to do as federal agencies to plan and protect our systems. At the front end, with effective identity management, what we have is the other piece of the puzzle. When we have low risk, low threat applications, it is important for government applications to trust credentials issued by others at known levels of assurance. At high levels of assurance, we have to be extremely thoughtful about the data that we are protecting, the systems that we're exposing. We cannot say, no, we're not going to put an application online, because 20 years from now, all applications will be online. Fortunately, I'll either be drooling in an old folks' home or won't care about it. But these things are coming. There are some trains you don't try to stop. What we have to do is we have to make sure that the systems that we put out there, the services that we provide, are protected both in the classic cybersecurity sense and with appropriate identity management techniques. That's just the bottom line. By bringing OpenID and InfoCard technologies to this space, we as Don and Eric said, we work out the bugs. We figure out what the collateral damage is and fix that, so that the next iteration of these technologies are level 2 capable, are level 3 capable. Who knows, maybe level 4 capable. So what we do in the future is we build out all of this so that identity management becomes an effective and easily usable part of everybody's day-to-day experience with the government. That's where we're headed with this.
Thank you, Peter. And just to put the problem into some perspective, I just want to remind folks that the U.S. population hovers somewhere around the 300 million mark. And it seems that the younger they are, the more adept they are at using some of these tools. And those are the folks that we actually are trying to reach and to work with. That's a lot of folks. That concludes our session today. I would like to thank our speakers, Dr. Peter Alterman from the National Institutes of Health, Ron Carpinella from Equifax, Eric Sachs from Google, and Don Thibault from the OpenID Foundation. I'd also like to thank our hosts today, Booz Allen Hamilton, and particularly Leanne Van Wagner, for doing the introductions for us today, the Distinguished Speakers Program, the System Resources Center, and of course, Federal News Radio. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Booz Allen Hamilton's panel discussion, Open Networks for Open Government, Identity in the Web 3.0 Framework, as part of its Distinguished Speakers Program, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. To hear this show in its entirety and for more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Booz Allen has assembled a panel of leading experts from across the government to discuss open networks for open government, identity in the 3.0 framework. The move to adopt trust frameworks and open trust networks heralds an era of greater openness and interoperability between government agencies, the private sector, and the public at large. Many see this new identity-driven move to open federation as a critical step toward a more open and efficient government. Learn more at BoozAllen.com/identity. Booz Allen Hamilton delivers results that endure.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, worldwide on federalnewsradio.com. News and information for and about the federal decision maker. Weekday mornings 6 to 10, listen to The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris. They'll give you the story behind the headlines and talk to the federal newsmakers themselves. Then it's In Depth with Francis Rose from 1 to 3, focusing on career development for the federal executive. 3 to 7, join Chris Dorobek and Amy Morris for the Daily Debrief. Live interactive news and analysis on the things that affect your federal career. Federal News Radio 1500 AM also broadcasts all the action of Nats baseball, Caps hockey, GW and American University basketball, Navy athletics, and DC United soccer. Visit federalnewsradio.com for the latest game information and listen on the radio or on your computer to all the game day action. Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
CNN Radio, I'm Rick Vincent. More resources are being brought into New York and